So I had one of those moments, perhaps you've had one like it, one of those moments where you see all of your gifts and all of your failures in one inescapable period. We were cooking this roast pork dish called cochinita pibil, this mind-blowing delicious dish from the Yucatan that you generally roast outdoors in banana leaves, and after 12 hours of marinating and running all over Boston for the various things I forgot to order on Amazon, teaching ourselves to literally prune the tree in our backyard with WikiHow videos to get wood for smoking, one of the things I didn't buy on Amazon. There were these beautiful little packets wrapped in fragrant banana leaves sizzling among the billowing smoke, and I decided to peek inside. They were literally charcoal. So past burned that I truly believe we could have repurposed them as briquettes for a future attempt. And so I sat on the ground, pulling at the burned banana leaves with my tongs, and I declared, "Nothing is worth doing ever," in a voice that I'm 100% sure my mother would have recognized from age 3, 12, and probably 18. "Why should we ever even try anything?" I yelled. Somatics teacher LaWanda H. Thompson teaches that embodiment means that under pressure, I won't revert back to an old pattern. That under pressure, I will not revert back to a pattern that doesn't serve me. And this is the thorny spiritual truth that I'm living with so many days, that who I am on my worst days is actually who I am. It's a bummer. Right there with you. That who I am under pressure is actually who I am. Organizer Caitlin Breedlove often says that we respond to crisis with our highest level of training, not our highest values. And Buddhist teacher Reverend Angel Kyodo Williams writes that today's leaders must systemically and lovingly prepare us to tolerate the inherent discomfort of change in order to wedge open the way to transformation. And Reverend Angel Kyodo Williams says that leaders must do this under pressure, while in motion, and with and on the behalf of others. Pressure reveals to me where I am really, really practiced and where I have never done this before. Or to say it another way, pressure reveals to me where I embody my values, they're not separate from me, and where they are the first things I forget about. It's not super cute down there under pressure. My ego says, pretend you're better. Pretend you didn't throw a screaming, crying fit about dinner. My soul knows, if I don't know who I am under pressure, I can never shift. The good news, as Unitarian Universalists, we know this, we are already saved from perfection, amen. Thank goodness. And no matter what, for us here, we are totally, amazingly alive, alive, alive. As Dr. Ewing says, put a finger to my wrist or my temple, and I feel it, I am magic. My blood still carries the gifts of air from heart to brain miraculously. LaWanda and others, some of you may be students or teachers of this work, teach that it takes 21 times for there to be a possibility of a new behavior, 300 times for muscle memory. The athletes and artists among us know this, for our bodies to instinctively do a thing, and 3,000 times for embodiment, so that it's not a practice, it's who I am, and 10,000 times for mastery. Whatever we practice, we get really great at. If we practice flexibility, humility, courage, We get strong at those things. When we practice rigidness, ego, cowardness, there's not enough. We get strong at those things. If we practice saying, what about that 501c3 status, or we don't need to ask those people, or no one ever trained me to do that, those muscles get more and more practiced, more and more practiced. And of course, if we're doing something for the first or 14th time, we're nowhere near embodiment, of course. So I try to remember that was my first time trying to make cochinita pibil. It's the first time that I'm living with a 2-year-old, the first time living under this administration, the 5th time having that particularly hard conversation, nowhere near the 21 times needed to be able to do it a different way. And we are already saved from perfection. I was on the subway once, and a woman was being harassed by a man. They sat across from one another, and he was saying inappropriate things, and the rest of us on that subway car were really uncomfortable. Some of us were frozen. But the woman next to the woman who was being harassed, under pressure, she found her breath. She engaged the woman in conversation, asked if she was okay, if she wanted someone to walk with her when it came to her stop. The man kept at it, and something in my gut responded. And without thinking much, I moved to stand in between them so that he could no longer see her or speak to her directly. And I put my back to him, and I picked up my phone, and I called someone random just to have something to do. "You're messing with my view," he hollered. I didn't respond. I was on the phone. We kept at it. The two women talking, me standing there, until it was time for the woman to get off the train. This is not a story about how good I am at de-escalating or how brave I am or even to say that was the right thing to do, but is to say that somehow I got enough practice so that my gut, my muscles, my grounding worked under pressure. Not just in the quiet of a beautiful sanctuary or the calm of my bedroom, but out in that uncertain, scary world where there is no right answer so often. Reverend Angel Kito Williams sometimes says, "Our grounding is only as useful as it stands up to speed and pressure." I don't actually have a pressure cooker. Barely a crock pot that stays in the basement and taunts me with visions of meatballs and the things that people put on blogs and say they made in their pressure cookers. But the metaphor, I think, stands. The pressures of this living, its violences, grief, and loss can be so devastating. And pressure can be a kind of spiritual laboratory, not of who I want to be, or who I've said on a panel or to my therapist that I am, but who I actually am. What muscles are so practiced so they're strong, and which ones are weak because I'm scared to even try. Thinking a lot about freedom these days, I met with someone who is in Immigration and Customs detention in Boston. He spent 8 days in solitary confinement, and when I saw him on Friday, he had just left, and he said to me, "Today, though I am still in prison, today I'm a little more free, because I am here sitting with you, because I'm out of solitary." We've been doing some very emergent work in Boston, where I live, building on decades of organizing to try to support folks in ICE jail. And so sometimes I get these calls over this for-profit Securus line with a robot voice that says, this call cost $1 billion and it's being recorded. And then there is a voice on the other end that is far away and tired. And sometimes we can't communicate well because the person speaks Mandarin or Turkish. And so we just say each other's names for a little bit and hang up. And then when I'm in bed, I think again and again, I am falling asleep and I am not in prison. I think about when the police showed up at a family camping trip when I was a kid, saying my uncle had violated his parole, and was he free? I think of my comrades, my colleagues, those who are pastoring inside that ICE jail, and are they free? I think of my father and my aunts and uncles who got those refugee visas, those plane tickets out of Vietnam in 1975, some sort of ticket to some sort of freedom. There's a thing that happens for many of us, that some things are news and other things are family. So for some of us, the Muslim travel ban is news. For others of us, it's family. For some of us, increased ICE enforcement or surveillance or stop and frisk or addiction or climate chaos or cash bail are issues or headlines, and for some of us, family. This maybe is a different way of understanding embodiment. That I live my values, yes, because they are morally right, but also because it's my family. And I'm gonna fight for that person like family, because in the end, if we believe the words we say about interdependence, they actually are. And I think this matters, because of course I wanna do the right thing, but somehow, under pressure, it's actually less the rightness that makes me fight scrappy and hard and to the end for someone. And it's more the knowing that deep down, they are family. And people fought for me and my family like we were theirs, even though we were strangers. Ruth Brown is the name of the woman in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, not so far from here, who welcomed my dad and his parents into her home and family. Ruth somehow decided that Vietnamese refugees were not just a headline, but family. I told her daughters I was doing this work and I wanted to know why their family did what they did. So they told me funny stories of how my dad seemed more interested in his studies and tennis than in making friends with them, which seems not so very different from now. And they told me stories I'd never heard about how my grandparents asked for a live chicken to cook a beautiful feast with in thanks when they moved out. They wrote to me, we often had visitors from around the world. Some would come for dinner, some would stay for a weekend, and your family stayed for months. It was the Christian thing to do. May we see what pressure too may teach us, what we need to practice, so that it's not our first or second time. Go with me for a moment and let's think about this. Bring to mind a time that you were under some pressure, a bad day, an impossible decision, a crisis. Maybe think of something that you were practicing a lot in that moment, even if it wasn't necessarily serving you. Maybe you were thinking, no one trained me to do this. I don't know how to do this. There isn't enough. someone else must be the one who's going to do this. And imagine it actually as a muscle. It's really strong from being practiced. And imagine if you let it soften, get a little weaker, let it go. And now maybe bring to mind something that you want to be able to practice under pressure, to turn to that muscle memory. Hold that. Imagine it too as a muscle. Maybe even imagine it's your pinky, which for most of us is not very strong. Feel how easily it can give way. And now imagine it practiced. Not something you do, but something core to who we are. Intuitive, embodied. 21 times for a chance at a new pattern. 300 times for the muscle memory of interdependence. 3,000 times to embody it. 3,000 times to embody freedom and family. Amen, and blessed be. If you would rise in body or in spirit, our closing hymn is Circle Round for Freedom.